Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Fredbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 149. I mean, we are sneaking up on 150. We're almost at 150 episodes. And the weird thing is I am no longer amazed. Well, I'm kind of amazed. I'm a little amazed, but I'm not shocked by the fact that I can do anything 150 times. This has kind of become a habit at this point. I think about it, you know. I'm amazed at the fact that I'm not amazed at that, though. So, how meta is that? I am not amazed. I am amazed at my non-amazement. Speaking of things that are meta and trippy, I forgot to wish everyone a happy 420 yesterday. And being from Denver, Colorado, that was a major faux pas. So, among my listeners, just if there's any of you who are were enjoying life yesterday and you felt slighted by my lack of acknowledging your particular holiday, you know, well, you know, you can basically get over it, but there's a topic I don't talk about in public much. I'm not a giant fan, but I get myself in trouble when I talk about that in public. All right. So, So as many of you know, I have day jobs. Okay. So I have this thing, this consulting firm called Calyx, which is kind of an apostolate. It kind of does some apostolic work, but it also does some kind of hard, fast design and engagement and stuff. And one thing that we do is we manage this coffee bar, right? And so there's times that I'm stuck behind a counter in a place all day, and there's sometimes that I'm out running around taking meetings. Sometimes I'm sitting in a cafe or at my desk designing stuff. A lot of times I'm just on the phone and sending emails. But there's, so the days that I'm like, okay, the way I've set this week up, I'm going to be in place behind a bar being coffee boy, just like pulling shots and talking to people and doing the behind the counter thing. You know, those are days that I don't really schedule much else, you know? And then those days that I have, especially when I've had several of those days in a row, when I get a day that I'm like, oh man, I got some freedom here. I'm glad to get it. And so I've actually had a pretty open, I've done some bar hour. I normally do that all at once, like all in one big chunk, but this week I kind of broke it up because everyone needed different weird schedule changes. So I've kind of been working short shifts almost every day, and I have to work all day tomorrow behind the bar. So, so that's going to get interesting, but today I had off and I had to come in for a meeting, but I didn't have to jump up and run. And man, I tell you what, not having to get up and get into a car and strap yourself into it and fight traffic with a bunch of people strapped in these other machines is a much better way to start a day. But how did I start my day? I woke up super early, could not go back to sleep. So I finally got back to sleep, so I slept in a little bit. And I got up, looked at my phone, and I got messages from one of my employees here at the cafe that the drain had just, like, we have this long-standing issue in our building where sometimes water, soapy water that we don't know where it's coming from, will just randomly come up out of the drain all over our floor. And like right, and it's usually like right after you open, so it's like at like 8 o'clock or so. So it's like you're like, it's like 7:45, 8 o'clock. You just like starting to get your morning rush going, and there's a bunch of water just coming all over the place. Awesome, great. So yeah, that was my introduction to the day. Was, oh wow, I'm rested. Good. Let's go get some coffee. Hey, what's this on my phone? Oh, come on, really? Dang it. So far this week we've had a point of sale computer apocalypse, which was fixed by a reboot, and another drain apocalypse, which were fixed by some dirty towels. So it's like, no, okay, it's not that big a deal. But I should just learn to underreact. Because most of the time I overreact, and it's like Aristotle talked about, right? You have to bend the stick backwards. If a stick is bent the wrong way, you want to bend it you want it to be straight. You have to bend it the other direction. So I should start underreacting, you know. Anyway, so So last night, I attempted a cultural rite of passage, and I was not able to do it. And it got me thinking about, some stuff in general, and I want to talk about it. So the cultural passage was, I have a confession to make. Okay. And this is I'm very personal with you guys, heart on my sleeve. Here's my confession. Are you ready? Hi, my name's Andrew, and I have never seen The Lion King. I know. I just, look, I was a little old for the whole Disney thing. Like, when those movies kind of started coming out in rapid succession, I was already kind of a little too old for that, and I'm an only child. I don't have little brothers and sisters that I would be kind of like watching it with. And then I didn't get married. I mean, I stayed single. Now, I mean, I was engaged in the 90s, and the woman I was engaged to had a little 4.5-year-old, 5-year-old daughter, who's now way older than I'm comfortable even thinking about. But shout out to you, Clara. Almost Daddy loves you. And so I got a little bit of taste of that, but she actually liked watching, other than like The Sound of Music. I mean, she would just get on a movie and watch it over and over again back when she was little. And like, she would get like adult movies. Like, she like wanted to watch Groundhog Day all the time. So it's like, I mean, she watched some of those, but I'm sorry. I've never seen The Lion King. And I just thought it was like, it's The Lion King. Well, evidently, it's a pretty important movie, and my pastor was actually preaching out of it, like using an example from it that I thought was really beautiful the other day. And when I started kind of telling some of my friends, yeah, I want to see The Lion King, I've never seen it, people looked at me like I had a third eye. I mean, they looked at me like I was nuts. And so I anticipate that listening to this, there is a good portion of my listening audience, that my entire audience is listening, and I am pretty sure both of you are shocked that I have not seen The Lion King. I mean, I've seen it like in passing. Like, I've been in Walmart and it was on the bank of TVs. I've been in someone's house to visit and their kids were like in the corner watching The Lion King. I've seen clips, you know, on television, and I kind of, you know, but I don't, I know that there's something called Hakuna Matata involved in it, but I don't know, like a song or a saying or something. I don't even know what that means. I know, I'm a cultural leper. I was too busy listening to obscure punk rock and grunge music and skateboarding and trying to save the world with coffee houses. So yes, I have never seen The Lion King. So last night, knowing that this was the case, me and the illustrious, lovely, and talented Perry West decided that we were going to have an evening in, and we were going to eat Thai food and watch the Lion King, right? So I show up, and he gets the Thai food, and I show up at home, pour myself a glass of wine. He's like, "Would you get the movie?" I'm like, "No, I didn't get the movie. I mean, we just watch it." He's like, "It's not on Netflix." I'm like, "Okay, well, it's going to be on something. We'll check Hulu." No. Amazon Prime? No. Okay, well, we've got that HBO On Demand thing. Let's look on there. Or with the Xfinity On Demand. No. I didn't look on HBO On Demand, but I'm guessing probably not. So I'm like, "Okay, dude, Apple will sell it. Apple's got it, surely. I'll buy the stupid thing. Let's go get it." So I go upstairs. I get my Apple TV. I bring it down. And then I plug it all in. We had to, you know, tip the TV down, use the flashlight on the back of the phone because there wasn't enough light in the living room. Found an HDMI slot, got it all, finally got it set up. Okay, because I normally keep my Apple TV set up in my room, right? Okay, good. Let's do this. So you ready? Yeah. Thai food, you know, no. There's no light. As best I can tell, there is no way to watch The Lion King without going to the last Blockbuster open and renting it. Because when I went online, they're saying, "Yeah, they pulled it off the shelves. They're not really selling it right now," or whatever. It's like, so I mean, and I don't even own a DVD player right now. I mean, I obviously I could go buy, I could go to some store and buy the cheapest little tiny DVD player. I might have an old laptop that if worse came to worse, I could watch it in. But my current laptop doesn't even have a DVD slot, an optical drive. So I'm just wanting to put that out there. I wanted to put out my confession, but then I want to say there's evidently no place to buy, to watch, or as best I can tell, to buy the Lion King. So some friends of mine, Antoinette Golish, shout out to Antoinette Golish, offered to have us over for dinner at some point and show me the Lion King. So there's literally here in 2016, someone is going to have me over to their house and we're going to make dinner, and then we're going to get out literally a VHS recorder and put a VHS tape of the Lion King in to watch it. Now, something that is such a cultural phenomena, and the just the static I'm getting from how much this thing means to people, evidently, because they're all just shocked and freaking out that I haven't seen it. How is that not watchable right now? How is that possible? How is it that in this world you can't easily and legally go find a way to watch The Lion King without driving and finding some store that rents DVDs or something? I mean, it's like, that seems crazy to me. It's 2016. This is nuts. Anyway, I got more thoughts on this when we get back. We're good. Let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am not the Lion King.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we are talking about my attempt to rectify a giant cultural gap in my formation and to see The Lion King. So I could not find any place to watch it. It is not available, as best I can tell, on any of the normal streaming online rentable things. And, you know, Disney, I know Disney and Apple and Pixar have had issues and stuff, and there's different, Disney just doesn't play well with others a lot. But so my question is there an online Disney thing? I didn't search for that, but is there something they're trying to sell that they want you to have to go get, that they're going to withhold that? When I did a search online, and people were talking about it in some of the forums, and they said that Beauty and the Beast is the same way. You cannot find Beauty and the Beast. I'm like, that's insane. Everybody, I mean, how can you not? So there are parents with kids who are now having their first kid. They're getting old enough to watch these movies, and they want to show them The Lion King or Beauty and the Beast, or these things that are these cultural things we grew up with, or most people did, which I evidently didn't. And they can't go get them. So it got me thinking about, you know, I when I saw the keynote address for the new Apple TV, I thought just a small thing that was great was you can do a spotlight search and it will find, you can plug in, you know, you're looking for movie Clerks or whatever, and it will show you all the places that you can find it, and whether you can watch it for free because it's included, or rent it, or buy it, or whatever. It'll show it all across all of your apps where that movie is, right? I have seen Clerks, for the record. In Clerks 2, but not The Lion King. I think I've seen all the Kevin Smith films. that says a lot about me. I've seen Dogma like 17 times. I don't even like the movie that much, but I've never seen The Lion King. Anyway, so it seems to me that it is time for kind of an online clearinghouse, kind of an app that works on all the machines, where you can, they fill in these gaps. And I know, like, Netflix will take stuff down and put stuff up, and it's like, I guess they're trying to save server space. But it seems to me that, I mean, you can fit the Library of Alexandria on a thumb drive, how hard can it be for me? I mean, Spotify has almost every record ever made or whatever. It's like, how hard is it that I can't find a place online to pay some money and watch any movie I want? I mean, here's a better example. So there's a movie called Kicking and Screaming. Shout out to any of my friends who love the movie Kicking and Screaming. Not the soccer film with Will Ferrell. This is the first Noah Baumbach film. The guy that did the Kicking and Screaming. He did Margot at the Wedding. He did what is that? The whale thing. I just had it on the tip of my tongue. The movie, something about the whale. Jeff Daniels is in it. I'll think of it in a second. Anyway, this really famous guy, Noah Baumbach, did a ton of films. And his first film was called, it's about all these kids, you know, these guys that just graduated college and are living in a college town. Eric Stoltz plays this bartender that's been in college a million years. And it's a really great film. It's really funny. It's got a lot of really classic things that got people from the early 90s, like myself, that kind of came of age then, are always quoting this movie. All my friends quote this movie. And so I know it's in the Criterion Collection. So I went to Hulu because they have the entire Criterion Collection, supposedly. They don't have Kicking and Screaming. So they even promote the fact that they have all these old movies in the Criterion Collection. They don't have Kicking and Screaming. Really makes me mad. Okay, so sidebar on Kicking and Screaming and why I know that it's in the Criterion Collection. This is a good story. This is for you Ventura, California people out there. So back when I had my company Coffee Boy, I had this client called The Underground over on Telegraph, kind of almost on Five Points, so Telegraph and Main, kind of up, kind of just past Assumption Catholic Church on the left there. I think it used to be, I guess, like a furniture store now or something. Anyways, a big open performance space, kind of some weird folks hanging out. But that coffee bar, nice people. I was trying to help out. I had graduated from Thomas Aquinas College. I had a little time on my hands because I'd kind of gotten used to working a job on the weekend selling wine, going to school in one of the hardest academic programs in the country, and running a company at the same time. So I was kind of like, all I have to do is work selling wine and run this company. It's like vacation. So they were kind of hurting a little bit and trying to make it. And I thought, you know what? Let's kill two birds with one stone. Let's get them some free payroll. I'll save an account for wholesale. And I'll help them out. I'll get some time behind the bar. I've been kind of missing being behind a commercial bar all the time. That, you know, my favorite espresso machine at the time. And I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna pull some shots. So I started volunteering to take shifts and pulling shots. So in this movie, Kicking and Screaming, Eric Stoltz is playing a bartender. And who's been, like, I guess he's like studying philosophy or something, literature. And he's been there forever. He's working on his PhD. And he's like, you know, the third tome has been quite a bear because it's funny because the first two came so effortlessly. Like, he's just been working on this thesis for a million years. And he's a bartender in like a townie bar, right? So it's always like, you know, like factory workers and stuff working in this bar. And there's these two guys that are like, obviously, like local blue collar workers. And he's like, and he says, you know, and I'm quoting myself here, but if Plato is a fine red wine, then Aristotle is a dry martini. Now, for the record, that is a really apt description of those two philosophers as someone who drinks both martinis and red wine. I've drank and sold red wine professionally, and that is definitely, Plato is dry red wine. Aristotle is maybe a different red wine, but maybe a martini. Anyway, so I love that quote, right? So I'm working this bar at the Underground, and Eric Stoltz comes into the bar up to the counter to order coffee. And he's got like this very, very pregnant Irish folk singer wife of his. And she sits down, and he comes up to order. So instead of saying, you know, welcome to the Underground, what can I get you or something? I just look at Eric Stoltz and I say, and I'm quoting myself here, But if Plato is a dry red wine, then if Plato is a fine red wine, then Aristotle is a dry martini. And he just looks at me and he starts crying. He goes, Chet, because that was the character's name. He goes, I bet you get like a lot of, you probably get a lot of mileage out of that character, don't you? I'm like, I quote it constantly. And he looks at me. We haven't even introduced ourselves. He hasn't given me an order. And he goes, it's coming out on the Criterion Collection, right? They're reissuing it. I'm like, really? So before I had gotten an order from Eric Stoltz or had even exchanged names and welcomed him into the shop, I had given him a quote from Kicking and Screaming and had found out that it had entered the Criterion Collection. So there's a comical aside. But how in the world can this movie, the first film of a famous filmmaker, why? This is going to drive me nuts not knowing his second film's name. I'm going to have to look it up over the break. How can it not be online? How can I not find that? How do I have to order, buy, rent a physical DVD still for that famous of a film? There's older films that are less famous that are all over Hulu and stuff from the Criterion Collection. How is that the case? So I'm just saying that we need to get... Look, we've gotten to the point where we don't think about... I mean, Redbox is still doing pretty good, but that's kind of a price thing, right? You can find all those movies that are in the Redbox, online. But they're, you can get a buck or two for one of those, I guess. I don't know what they cost now, but they're cheaper than renting online. So some people, they're like, yeah, you know what? I drive right by that store. We have a DVD player. And I kind of have a soft spot for CDs and DVDs, but it's just frustrating. I've gotten very used to sitting around and anyone says, hey, let's watch this. Oh, right on. Yeah, you can always go through. You have ten places to find movies online or on my TV. And it can always find it in some way to watch it, especially if you have Amazon Prime. No, not The Lion King. Not Kicking and Screaming. Evidently not Beauty and the Beast. I'm saying it's 2016. It's time we fix this. This is absolutely ridiculous that in this day and age, I can't watch The Lion King. So I don't know. I think that's interesting. The idea that we've gotten used to everything being findable at our fingertips. I was looking up a video for something the other day. Like I wanted to watch an old music video. And this is literally a music video that I remember sitting in front of MTV with the VCR set to record, where all I have to do is hit the red button when I see it come on. And I know that they're playing it about once every 2 hours. So I'm, waiting until the new video starts to get up and go, refill my glass of tea or whatever. I'm sitting there. Every time it comes to the end of a song, I'm waiting. I got my finger on the red button. And you're going to perform the ultimate coup. And you're going to record your favorite video. And then you can watch it anytime you want, right? I mean, that was like something you had to work for, right? And now it's like, I went to YouTube. There it is. Hey, you want the new remastered version? There that is. And it's like, we just get used to having whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want it on our phone. And, I don't know. I'm thinking that maybe this is I've gripe about all this all the time, but then when I bump up against it, I'm like, what in the world? How can that not be the case? There's two things I can't stand. Hypocrisy and not getting what I want, even when I'm against it. So, all right, let's go to the break. We'll be back in a second.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so the plot thickens. Oh, by the way, Squid and the Whale. I was thinking it, and then I went to say it, and I couldn't say it. I want to say Joan and the Whale, but I know that's not true. That wasn't right. It's The Squid and the Whale, which is one of the most uncomfortable, awkward films. Now, I say just for the record, okay, let's go have a sidebar on films. I'm a Catholic guy. You're listening to this on a Catholic media network. In the past, Catholic media networks were for a certain very small aspect of the Catholic populace. And we had this, and everybody expected us to be like these harbingers of family values or something like that. And it's like, I couldn't even mention a movie without critiquing it morally or something. Okay, so just for the record, I don't recommend, if you're like a fairly sheepish Catholic person and you hear me mention a movie or make a joke from The Big Lebowski or something, don't go watch it, hear a bunch of cursing or see some nudity, and then blame me. Okay, because that's not, I am not your personal, I'm not Michael Medved, I am not, you know, doing the clean movies movie review. That is not what I do. I spend my life kind of out in the culture of kind of everybody. And so my reference points are often from movies or music or from places and experiences that sometimes people in the Catholic choir might be offended by. So just for the record, go to wherever your entertainment filter is that you feel appropriate and comfortable with, and check movies before you go watch them because I mentioned them or something. This is my paranoia kicking in. All right, so the plot thickens. I searched on Hulu during the break, and Kicking and Screaming is on Hulu now. Ironically, though, it doesn't look like it's the Criterion Collection version, and you have to get the Showtime thing that they you can have added to. You can add Showtime to your Hulu. And so here's this random film made by somebody, but evidently Showtime has bought the online rights to it, and now they're going to lend those rights to Hulu as part of a package if you pay extra to get access to the Showtime stuff on Hulu, which I get it if it was like a Showtime show. But this is a movie from 1995. You know, yeah, this is it's a weird digital age that we're playing in. And I'm going to shut up about that. Okay, before I move on to the topic at hand today, which I've gone way over into, I was remiss in mentioning on August 14th, 2016, we lost a great man of the church, Father Raymond Guronsky. I did not have the pleasure of knowing Father Guronsky. I had met him a few times just in passing at an event or something. He had moved on from Denver, I think, by the time I got here. But for a long time, he did spiritual direction over at St. John Vianney Seminary. He's a Father Guronsky SJ. He's a Jesuit and a dang fine one. I think now he was out in Menlo Park at St. Patrick's or whatever, but he is, he was the spiritual director for a lot of my friends, or did formation of some kind with a lot of my friends, taught a lot of my friends, mostly the ones who are priests or who had been in seminary. And I mean, they speak of him in either vivacious, over-the-top, loving regards, or in just hushed tones the way you'd speak of a saint. So I bought, it's not a print, looks like, I had to buy it from a used place. I bought the book that came from his, it's called A Closer Walk with Christ, I think. It's his book on the Ignatian Exercises. And that is, and then he's got another book called Word and Silence out there. It's the dialogue between Christianity and the East, meaning like, you know, Buddhism and all, you know, and Hinduism, but probably primarily the Buddhist world, Eastern mysticism, that dialogue in the thought of Hans Urs von Balthasar. But he, Guronsky, from what I understand, was just a rare, brilliant human being who was also a really deep soul and who just had a deep, deep insight into reality and how that shows up in a human person in the totality of its kind of its fullness, you know? And so he died, and I don't know how he died. I don't know anything about it. And this, I just, you know, I don't think we probably have to spend too much time praying for the soul of Father Gurwonski. I have a funny feeling he probably had a pretty quick trip. But maybe throw a prayer up or two for him. I think we'll probably be praying, asking him for his prayers pretty soon. All right. So the topic I want to talk a little bit about today is, this is a really fresh topic, and I don't know a ton about it. I have not read this book yet, but I was driving today, and I was turned on NPR, and I was listening to Terry Gross on Fresh Air, which, you know what, Terry Gross, hands down, one of the best interviewers who's ever lived. I mean, her and I are from different cultural worlds, we're from different ideological worlds, but she has interviewed every manner of human being for years and years and years and years, and with a way that she manages to really get a lot out of this person. And she was interviewing a man named John Elder Robison, who wrote, he's written several books, but the book she was talking to him about was Switched On, a memoir of brain change and emotional awakening. And he wrote a famous book called, I've heard of it at least, and I don't really travel in these circles, called Look Me in the Eye, about his first person experience of his life with Asperger's syndrome. And so this guy is on, so he has Asperger's, he's on the autism spectrum ratio, as they call it, or on the autism spectrum, he has an autism spectrum disorder. There's a spectrum from severe to like kind of mild Asperger's, and it's, you know, I'm not even going to try to explain what all that is. I guess I will. I mean, because I guess most people know what autism is. And it shows up for different people, and they're still kind of arguing about what it is. But one thing that is kind of common among people, and I know a little bit about severe autism, because I used to work with developmentally disabled people. I don't know if that's probably not the term they use anymore. And if I offended anyone, I don't know what the current PC term for developmentally disabled was. In the early 90s, in early to mid 90s, if you were working with people with head injuries or severe, you know, mental retardation, or, you know, severe autism or something, those were the words we used, and we called it developmentally disabled was the word they used it. So I don't know what they call it now. I have gotten out of that world. But I've worked with two or three clients that were really severely autistic, right? And it seems the autism per se and just Asperger's and all that, so it seems to be a lack of connection on the emotional level to human beings, a lack of reading kind of situations in interpersonal relations, and kind of getting what's going on in the emotional life, kind of a real kind of an intimacy that isn't on an empathetic or emotional kind of level of intimacy. It's interesting. What is her name? Is that Taylor Grandin? Is that her name? Is a fairly famous person with autism that works closely with animals and with cattle and stuff, and she's a cowgirl, and she helps people. I've read a couple articles of hers where she helps people set up farms and cattle operations in a way that is better for the animals, because she can somehow figure out how to kind of think like they do as they're going through the process. The thing that's amazing about kind of people with autism, and some of them, is they can, some of it, like this guy in particular, what is his name again? Robison, John, is it John Elder Robison? John Elber Robison. He could just build, he was super technical. He would build radio equipment and stereo equipment. He worked in the rock industry and building like studio equipment and, you know, the stereo, you know, all the equipment for concerts and all this. And if you could leave him working alone on something technical like that, he would just knock it out of the park, but he had no idea how to deal with people. So here's why this book is interesting. He has undergone, as part of an experiment, transcranial magnetic stimulation. This is something they use for migraines. They use it for certain severe forms of depression, and they're now working on it for mapping and stuff. But they use this magnetic stimulation across the cranium, just like from outside. They just hold this plastic covered looking spoon thing, and they can stimulate parts of your brain, right? And so they did a study. This Italian doctor that's at Harvard Medical, I think he was, recruited him because he read his book, and they did a study on him where they stimulated these different parts of the brain and saw what it would do to someone with Asperger's. And suffice to say, the results were life-changing and interesting. And I think they give us an insight into the nature of the healthy functioning, the functioning as designed human person, and the functioning as designed human brain. And so I want to go into that a little bit and talk about what he said and talk about what that might mean. So let's go to the break. We'll be back in just a second.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host. Just the fat guy just running that last lap around on the fourth segment, the fourth lap around the open mile. Just still bitter about that. So we're talking about John Elder Robison and his experience after receiving transcranial magnetic stimulation, as told to Terry Gross over on Fresh Air on NPR. So what happened to this guy is he had been in the studio helping people record music, working as an engineer, and his job was to make this music that they were working on sound as good as it could possibly sound and get out and be represented as accurately and well to the person listening as possible. But he never really noticed this is a love song, or this is a sad song, or this is an ironic. He didn't really connect to lyrics in any way, or even the emotional content of chord changes and all that. It was all just kind of mathematics and technology for him. And he was great at it by all accounts, right? And he received TCS, and afterwards he began to be able to read the cues of this rich emotional life that he had been told all his life that everyone has. And he's been told all his life that there's a whole nother level of language happening in the body cues and in the eyes and how people act and the tone of their voice. There's this whole other emotional side, right? There's this whole other thing that you're missing when you communicate. Right. So I think of it. This is not his example. I think of it in this way. It's like if you learn Chinese, for instance, or Vietnamese. I have a friend that used to speak Vietnamese. He learned it in the military. And there is the vocabulary and the way that it's said. But there's also kind of, you know, the actual shape of the words. But then there's a tonal system. So if you stay flat in your tone, you go down in your tone, or you go up in your tone, it completely changes the meaning of the word, right? So if I say, welcome to the counter position, welcome to the counter position, welcome to the counter position, those would mean completely different things, right? Or maybe related but different things. So think of that. Think if you could only hear what people were saying, but you couldn't understand kind of the emotional subtext of it and read what's going on in the room, you know? And so this guy, it was beautiful and tragic. He talked about his wife he'd been married to forever had severe depression, but it didn't drag him down and it didn't really affect him because he couldn't really ever tell. You know, unless she was just like curled up in a ball on the floor crying. And even then, it didn't really penetrate to him. He didn't feel her sadness. Right. And when, so he does this TCS and he starts feeling things and he starts experiencing this emotional world of other people and talking about it. And he ended up actually getting divorced and getting remarried because this thing that just didn't affect him at all just became too much for him. And it was interesting. Like he hadn't learned how to have kind of a coping mechanism to be affected by other people's emotions the way, I mean, he was just raw. You know, he was affected by everyone's emotions the way that we would only be affected by those mostly really, really close to us when in proximity and kind of under certain circumstances. Now, is that an advantage? Probably, maybe six of one, half dozen of the other. But what they figured out was, what they didn't do was they didn't stimulate some area of his brain that wasn't working. They subdued another area. And it turns out their theory is this, is that there's a part of our brain, an aspect of our brain, literally an area in the frontal cortex where there's this ability that we have. Like, say you're a doctor. And if you were just in a cafe and you just walked up and you just cut someone and caused blood to come out of their arm, you would have this visceral emotional reaction and you'd have to be really mad or wanting to hurt them, or you would feel very sorry if you did it on purpose or whatever. But if you're a doctor and you go in and you have to draw blood from someone, or you have to cut a human person with a scalpel to look at something, you have to distance yourself somehow. So we as human persons in certain situations, to get the job done, to get done what we have to do, we have to learn how to turn off that empathy and just see the technical aspect of the situation, right? And that turns out that that's a skill that's in an area, and they think that now that in people with Asperger's or with autism, it's that area is overactive. It doesn't shut off. And so when they limited that aspect, he started feeling everything and noticing things and all that. But then they thought that it would just last for about 15 minutes and then it would go back to normal. And he'd go on with his life, right? And he'd have kind of an inside of the memory of it. But it turns out he didn't get an immediate hit. It wasn't until the next day. And all of a sudden, he started hearing music, even music that he had worked on. And he was hearing the lyrics and catching the meaning and the emotion of the... And it was hitting him. And his wife's depression, he could feel it. He could empathize. And it was just... But he hadn't learned to kind of protect himself in any way. And in the end, it's like, you know, the doctor was talking about it, and he said, he used a really great example. He said, picture if you bought a car and you read the manual and they taught you how to do the car, and here's how you accelerate and here's what kind of torque it has and all that. And you know, well, I mean, it doesn't go as fast as they said it would. And it handles a little differently and it doesn't really quite get the gas mileage I was expecting, but you get used to it and you get used to how much brake and how much gas you need to do. And it's, well, it is what it is. It's my car now. And you drive it. And then you find out years later that when they gave it to you, the parking brake was on and you never took it off and you didn't know that. So someone goes, here, take this parking brake off. And now when you hit the gas, it goes. And when you try to stop, you have to hit it a lot harder to get it to stop. And it's like, it would take a while to figure out how to do this thing you already knew how to do, because of this different set of stimuli, this different situation, right? And that's kind of where he's at. The brake is off. And I tell you what, I have never been more blown away and just moved by listening to an interview. This guy started talking about all the pain that he feels now, looking back on situations and realizing that there were times when he thought he had these friends and they were all laughing together about something. And now he looks back at that context and can see that he was the butt of the joke, that he was the fool. And he realizes all the cold things that people have done to him and all the, and he said he expected that he would be able to feel this emotion and he would see all this manifold beauty in the world that everyone talks about. And he hadn't really seen that. He had just seen a ton of heartache and suffering and pain in people's lives. But then he started talking about how it was all worth it because he got to do this work now with the autism board of the, something with the government where he works with, helps legislation and does stuff with young people and stuff. And he started crying. So here's this guy that used to be completely emotionally blank. And he was just he's choking up and crying through the interview. He was now completely affected. He was talking about these young people that he can help now and how it's worth it that he has all this pain, that he remembers how much he was mistreated and all this. But it's so worth it. And he was just breaking down, crying and sobbing. And it just blew me away. And it made me think that, you know, maybe there's something analogous with the rest of us. Maybe our empathy function is a little numbed because of all this media and because all the tragedy we see. And, you know, I think that we're not affected enough. But I mean, this guy can't even watch the news. A couple days ago I saw, they had a couple of big earthquakes in Japan. Oh yeah, a bunch of people died. There's devastation. Yeah, do you want to get another coffee or something? You know, I'm just like, I mean, there's a certain kind of like, you know, Jane's Addiction wrote that album and that song back in the early 90s, Nothing Shocking. It's like there is a sense where we've seen so much of it and we've seen so much false pain and suffering and violence in movies and stuff that it doesn't hit us. That should break my heart. A bunch of people got killed in an earthquake. I shouldn't be like, oh man, that's crazy. I wonder if I started immediately thinking, oh, that's part of the Ring of Fire, maybe Ecuador. Oh man, I bet that's is that part of the, I'm thinking about this from a seismological perspective and, you know, I wonder if that's going to affect the West Coast. And, you know, I mean, there's people are dead, you know, and it's like people are in suffering, maybe still trapped somewhere or something. And it caught me for a second, like how I was shocked at how numb I was to that. So I don't know, maybe this guy getting fixed, so to speak, fixed a little too much, his board being bent too far the other direction, as we were talking about with Aristotle a while ago. Maybe he can tell us something about where straight is. Now that he's bent the board too far this way, maybe we can realize that our board was bent the other direction. And I don't know, me personally, I'm gonna try to just be a little more conscious of how alert I am to that stuff. Anyway, I need to be alert to the fact that we're out of time. So let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode. Thanks for coming out, kids. See you next time.